This interview is being done for the Oral History of Kentucky. The interview is with John Paul Davis in South Shore, Kentucky. And the date is August the 12th, 1980. The interview is being done by Sue Evans. Okay, let's start off. Mr. Davis, where was you born?
I was born in South Florida High.
South Florida High.
May 12, 1901.
Now, when did you all move to South Shore?
We moved here in 1910.
Let's talk about your father and your mother, and then we'll get to you. Let's get them. Now, what was... Your father was a riverboat man, right?
His father was a riverboat man.
What can you remember the first things about boats?
Well, it would have to be around 1910 or 11.
Okay, when the ferry boats would come from, what was it, Fullerton?
Fullerton.
Over to Fullerton.
Over to Fullerton, back and forth.
Was it horses then?
Oh, yes, definitely so. You see, that was back in the, I'd say 1910, 11, and there wasn't very many automobiles. In fact, there's only about 3 automobiles in our area. My grandfather owned one, and my parents owned one, and J.R. Morton owned one. That's, automobiles were very, very scarce then. It was all horse and buggies.
All horse and buggies.
And walking, I mean, people walked to and from work several miles.
Of course, that interests me. Now, did the horses get on, or were the horses and buggies both?
Oh, yeah. They had a big deck, you know, like that, and they had pictures of the boats.
And that's the way they got around.
Uh-huh.
Can you remember any of the men that would work with your father, the pilot of the boat, or work on the...
Well, I remember one that piloted the state with us for years. His name was Fred Hooter. Is this being recorded?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're on. Okay, let's... Did your father go on the boats every day, or is it like now that you would step back and let someone else
was,
run?
Well, we had a lot of employees, but my dad could fill in any of the jobs, an engineer, pilot, or working on the deck or anything. And he was there just about all the time, although his duties wasn't constant duties all the time, but he was there each part of the time. And of course, then the boats... didn't start operating until 6 o'clock in the morning, and they'd stop at 6 o'clock in the evening. We didn't have any transportation in the port of the ball after 6 o'clock on this side of the river.
Okay. Well, what part did your mother play?
Well, she kept the books and was really the paymaster.
Now, did we get her name? We didn't got her name.
Her name was Augusta Mead. Augusta Mead Davis.
And she did the...
All of the people.
All
of
the people. Okay, let's go on to Coney Island. I
want to
get that in here too,
Charlie. Well, that's Coney Island. That ground belonged to a lady here in town by the name of Nanny Holly. And her husband was also a riverman, and that's how we tend to know him so well. And they owned this land where Coney Island was. My dad took a 10-year lease on it. I don't recall just exactly what he paid for the lease. But anyway, he took that, and we built, there was a big ravine from the main part of town into the park, and he built a bridge into there so you could take walk across, or you could take your buggies and horse and buggies today. And we bought a street fair, an entire street fair, the Ferris wheel, merry-go-round, and different concessions, and we operated that for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of the summertime.
Now, you was telling me before about your mother making the ice cream.
Yeah, I get up many a time at 2:30, 4 o'clock in the morning to make the ice cream. And Pop, Lord, it sold for a nickel a bottle, and they'd just be hundreds of cases of it. So she took care of all the business, all the ordering of the merchandise, bookkeeping. She was just a hard worker.
Now, did the local people work there for you all?
Well, we had several of the people. I don't recall her name, but at one time I expect my dad had about 15 calls on the ferry and in the park too.
Okay, now did the ferry boat make trips over there for this?
No, that was the steamer J.P. Davis.
Okay.
That was excursion.
The excursion, it brought the people?
Yeah, from Portsmouth. We operated on the Friday nights, and all day on Saturday and all day on Sunday.
Okay, I was reading that article that was in Peter Ashton paper, reading, and you were talking about y'all got the merchandise, took a big fan.
Well, that
was it stuff you grew, or did you buy in here?
We bought, it's called the Wheelersburg Milling Company. They handled everything. And we would take the boat up there to Wheelersburg, and they'd load it on the boat for us. All flour, everything in the world in merchandise. And that's when we go up Lake Sandy. So, first trips were really successful, and we had a lot of bad luck on those trips. We still made a lot of money on those trips.
Well, I
want to
know what a packet is.
Well, a packet boat is a passenger boat too, but they were just they had the packet service from Huntington to Cincinnati on the Ohio River. I think one of the boats was named the Greyhound, and they would you take like a grocery store here in town. They would have an order of merchandise come from Ashland or Huntington, and they land at these spots and unload.
Well, I kept reading
that. And those packet boats usually had accommodation for a few passengers. I mean, they all right, state rooms, you know, and they always had their dining room on them and their boats too. Had good food.
Good food.
I was near 12 years old when I began my river career. My parents owned several boats, which was in operation between Fulton, Kentucky and Fulton, Ohio, and an excursion boat was carried with my name, J.P. Davis. In those days, we only had several months of school, 7 months of school, which gave me 5 months' work on the boats. It seems I always had to do all the other jobs that the other employees didn't want to do, sweeping the deck, keeping the waiting rooms in order and cleaning windows in the cabin and even fire the boilers for the men's lunch periods. I was just a fill-in for any job that had to be done. Now here's... In those days, transportation were mostly horse and buggies and express wagons and a mighty few autos. Of course, my janitorial job was centered cleaning the deck about every trip, and believe me, there was plenty of sweeping and shoveling to do. I'll call it by a nice name, fertilizer, but then when I referred to it, I call it the four-letter word. That's the way it goes. One of the ferry boats had a second deck that was used for recreational purposes with chairs and tables and so forth. Many lodges, churches, and other organizations would charter the boat for an outing for the evening, but many of the outings were not of that nature. Chicken fights, old-time square dances, sometimes which got pretty rough. I recall a group of businessmen from Ironton, Ohio and Ashland, Kentucky, chartering the boat for one evening for an unusual event, a bulldog and wildcat fight. In our show building, there was a basement, and we kept those animals in separate cages in the basement for 2 weeks, and of course it was my job to take care of them, water and feed them. My dad warned me not to let the secret out about them being there. Bologna was mostly their food, and I was going to the grocery store buying very often, and one time the clerk must have got suspicious and said, "You are not poor people, so why are you buying so much bologna?" I had to think quick for an answer, so I told him the clerk we were keeping the dog and a cat for some friends who were away on a vacation.
Well, they might arrive for the event, and I would say at least 200 people were on the boat when we left shore. Being a sporting crowd and ready to bet, many had consumed stronger beverages than Orange Crush. Dad was reluctant to let me go on this particular trip, but finally gave in. And he said absolutely no to my sister Doris, now Mrs. Robert Johnson. But no was not her answer. She hid under the pilot house. That was a small place that was used for supplies for the boat. When the boat had left shore, and she came out and went to the pilot house where my dad was piloting, there was nothing he could do, but then she got to see the excitement. When the two cages were brought out on the deck, the betting begun. I never saw so much money exchanged in my life, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. The Wildcat and the Bulldog were put on one large cage. My option was that the Wildcat would tear the Bulldog to pieces, but my dad didn't think so. For the first few seconds, they just pawed at each other. Then the Bulldog grabbed the cat at the throat and held on a short time, and the Wildcat fell over dead. Dad must have done pretty well, for he gave Doris and me a $10 bill each. My parents were wonderful paymasters. I always had plenty of money, but most of my money went for nice clothes. Once I started school the fall, I had 7 pair of new shoes and many outfits. And I can look back now and see some of my chums come to school barefooted until frost and didn't even have 1 pair. I always liked diamonds, and one season I bought one and paid $95, which was a lot of money then. I still like those things and now have 2 rings valued at $25,000. My second career, the show business, started in 1915. My dad built my mother the first movie picture theater in this area, the Times Theater. My duties there were many. I always had to have all the janitorial services, working in the operator's booth, rewinding the reels, usher, and the piano playing. Mom sold the tickets, and my sister Doris took up the tickets. We were in the show business for about 4 years when the talkies first come out. One incident happened when my piano playing at the show. One night, I guess I became too interested in the picture and wasn't paying my music much attention. It was a sad scene, and I was playing Sidewalks of New York when it should have been Hearts and Flowers. Mom come rushing down the aisle and pulled my ear and told me to pay attention to the pictures and play music accordingly. I have never lived that mistake down, and I do sincerely say I don't believe I ever will go to the Archer's Pit without Mom reminding me of that episode. In 1920, after the picture show stretch, we bought what was known as Coney Island Amusement Park. I wrote an article for the Asheville Independent paper, which I'll read later in this taping. The article also appeared in other newspapers, and the Waterway Journal in St. Louis, Missouri carried it in one of their features items, the J.P. Davis story. I have been on the corner in South Shore for 49 years and have been seen many changes and still going strong. I was the first one in this area to have natural gas, first to have an all-electrical apartment, first radio with inside antenna, first colored television, first Cadillac, first air conditioner, and now waiting for phonovision.
That phonovision will be nice, won't it?
That'll be something.
Now,
well,
Mr. Davis, tell us about, like, the Depression. Now, you were working somewhere.
I worked after we went out of the show business, I went to work at Queen Steel Corporation in the office there. I worked there 10 years. And I had charge of the raw material department, had a real good job. Well, when in 1927, I believe it was, my brother-in-law, Mr. Hanna, bought this whole edition here, and he developed into this town. And before there's anything at all here, my sister called me one Sunday morning and said, we're coming over to lay out got the plat for this town, and says, we think you ought to buy one of the lots for an investment. So they picked me up and took me for on Sunday morning, and then, of course, nothing here at all. And I selected this lot where I am right now. And when we bought it, believe it or not, their intention, my dad and my brother always put a bank here, and I was supposed to be the banker. There's a lot of difference being a banker and a gasoline station man, isn't
I don't
there?
Know about that.
But anyway, I bought this lot and in 27 or 28, whichever it was, and then when the Depression struck, it changed everything.
And the first thing they did when I was working in the office there, they cut her salary down, and then they began to cut her days down. And I just simply couldn't make it, that's all it was for. So we owned the bus line here, and my dad said, well, if you build a station there, we'll buy all of our gas there. And there's some business people here in town, school teachers, so I knew them all. And I did real well from the very beginning. Even during the Depression, I did real well.
Did all the banks close here during the
Every one of them. Every bank was closed, I think, several days before they reopened. Of course, they all had to be certified again to operate.
Do you think everyone lost equally when the banks closed?
Well, I don't recall too much about their operations then. Our money was all cash. It was cash every day, you see. We had the bus line, the ferry line, and everything. And when things got real tight right at that time, the weeks didn't do any banking. Our banking was all done, or it really was. It
just kept on.
Of course, we had some money tied up in the bank and they wasn't open, closed for that one thing. But on the other hand, we didn't suffer too much.
Was the prices higher or lower during the Depression when we were trying to buy something? Did you tell
me? Well, money was as scarce. Well, I can remember when I opened up here, if someone gave me a $5 bill, I'd feel it twice to see if it was real. There's no money in circulation at all. Only a small money, no bills.
Mm-hmm. What did the federal government do to help? Do you remember?
I don't recall. They sort of had to. They had to be recertified to operate again. If they had more money out than they could collect in, then they was in difficulty. There was one bank in Portland. I believe it was called the First National Bank. It never did open. It was closed for several months. But locally, I think most of all our banks were in pretty good shape. I mean, they give them their certificate to begin operation again after that closing.
Do you know of any businesses locally that went under and couldn't survive?
I couldn't. I'm sure they have been, but I just couldn't know.
Did the people really talk about the hard times? Or did they just accept it?
Well, they accepted it, but they was really, I know we had neighbors down there. We had a lot of property. We had, my mother, I said we had 20 or maybe 25 renting houses. And Mom cut the rent on so many of them, you know. And when they come and pay the rent, she'd give the children a dollar or two back, you know. Mm-hmm. Or maybe give them a basket of oranges or a basket of fruit.
I've heard that.
We've been pretty successful all of our life with money. We really have. By every venture that my brother-in-law, that was Mr. Hannah, and my daddy, it's been fairly successful. And it's always been cash. And, you know, that's a nice thing.
Yes. Well,
in fact, during the Depression, my mother and dad went south every winter. And when people were just really having it bad, because if you take, for instance, of course, the bridge was up, but it was higher. The ferries was cheaper. That's our transportation. And they went to Portsmouth, any employee went to Portsmouth and just worked an hour or 2 hours, they'd have to cross the ferry.
Let's talk a little bit about what about South Shore got its name?
My sister named it.
Really?
Yes, she named it. They first started to call it Bluegrass, Kentucky. And my sister, the late Hazel Hannah, that's Byron's mother, I named it. So it's South Shore, Kentucky.
Now, when you bought this corner in South Shore, was there any other businesses here?
Not building at any time.
And they were just dirt streets, or?
Oh, yeah.
Or dirt road?
The dirt road. The main road was up here next to the hill. That was 23.
Back
this way. And when Mr. Hanna bought this, my dad was in all too. They laid the town out, and then they concreted the street from up here at the end of this section here, into the river, and that's when they put the ferry in that section there. They moved it from Ford and up to here, and it operated for several years.
Okay, now when this was wet here, was it as rough as people said it was?
Pretty rough.
Okay, yeah. Did they buy it by the bottle or the drink?
The whiskey. I don't think they bought whiskey by the drink, but beer was served, I mean, right out of the, right in the open. And they had two beer gardens just up the street here. And then they had a liquor store over there where your insurance company was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think all your stronger beverages, like your whiskey and gin, that was sold for the bottle.
Wow.
Yes, it was pretty rough. It really was. We didn't have our state patrolmen on the highway then like we have now. And about the only protection we had would be through the sheriff department. And of course, they couldn't be on duty all the time in all sections of the county. And it was pretty rough. I've seen some awful bad fights right out there on this corner.
Was there anyone ever killed, you think? Shot?
Yes, I'm sure that, I think there was two people stabbed here at one of these beer gardens that died in that accident.
How have you seen South Shore change?
Well, to look back 50 years from now, you know it's changed a lot. But it changed gradually. The individual, unless you'd be away from it, it would be pretty hard to describe. It really would.
Okay, the doctors back then, who were the doctors that we had?
The doctors then was Dr. Meadows and Dr. Morris. We had two. And of course, they're deceased.
They took care of?
Made house calls. And our first dentist that I think we've had was Dr. Engel.
And he's still with us, too.
I understand his health isn't too good. He's trying to retire. Pretty hard for him to do. We're getting a new dentist in town. I don't know his name, but he's moving in for the Jiffy Market lot.
That's what someone said.
They say he's a local boy and married a local girl, but I don't recall.
Well, I don't either.
I don't recall.
I didn't know them.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't recall either one of them.
Of course, we had Dr. Riddle for several years.
Yes.
Too.
I was fortunate after he passed away, he was my medical doctor. And of course, Dr. Collins down here, I know him real well, been his home several times. He doesn't solicit any new business at all, so I called down there and he told me to stop in, so I went down the next day and he made me a card out. He said, David, you come down anytime you need. And that was very fortunate.
Mm-hmm.
And same way down at the dentist, when I was having a lot of dental work done, I'd call down there and I wouldn't have an appointment. I'd just call and tell the receptionist, and she had a cancellation or she could run me in, and I'd be down there in 2 minutes' time, and you know, they took care of me all the time that way. And that's you're pretty fortunate.
Yes.
You're very fortunate.
That makes it nice.
It sure does. I've been very lucky.
You can hardly beat a small community, do you?
I never want to live in a big city. During the war, after I came out of service, I went to work in Cincinnati. I worked at a big defense plant there, and I stayed in one of the nice hotels downtown. And you didn't even. I didn't even know the clerks there in the office. I pay my room rent or whatever I had over there at the Bell every week, and I just wouldn't recognize them. You were just a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there a year and a half, and I wanted to.
That's true.
No, I never want to live in a big city. I like to go there and shop and look around, but as far as living quarters, you know,
no.
I'll take the small town.
And you went to school down?
Graded school down to in Fullerton. When I went there, they only had the two rooms.
Two rooms.
They had the what was called a chart class. I don't think they even have it in school
anymore.
What
is a chart class?
Yeah, chart.
Chart.
It was just ABC, what it was. And then the first, second, third, and fourth grade was in this one room, and the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth was in the next room. And I graduated from there. Then I took a business course in Lexington, Kentucky. I was there for 9 months. That's where I got my business education. The old Wilbur R. Smith Business College. It's associated with the university there.
Yes.
I was there 9 months.
Did the children bring their lunch to school?
Oh, yes. Lord, yes. I can look back now. I don't know. It seemed like my mother always felt sorry for real poor people. I don't know why it was. She'd tell me when she put up an extra banana in my lunch, or an apple, or an extra sandwich. She said, well, some of your friends maybe don't have this much. You give it to them. And that's not.
Yes, that's nice, isn't it? Really, it is.
Oh, there's a lot of poor people in this area.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Was the meal always the most important, you know, for people to get employed?
The meal? Uh-huh. Well, the shoe factories played a big part, too. It was, there's more women in the shoe factories than there were men, but the steel plant was your main employee there. When I went to work there in 21, I believe it was, I worked for 30. They was around 6,000 people worked there. I think of. And when it went down this last time, it's less around 1,000. I would say that's a big difference.
That's true. That is true. Sad.
Well, it certainly is to see your businesses in your area go down the valley.
What did you? Well, I guess you watched the Democrat convention last night.
Oh,
yes. Did you watch them? Okay. Well, I see.
Watched every bit of it.
So I guess Carter is going to go in, isn't he? They're not going to have an open.
Well, they're not going to have an open convention, but there's still some.
Has there been an open convention before? That's the first I've ever heard of. Maybe I just haven't been into it too much.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of confusion in one of the other conventions, and I can't recall which one it was, but. There was a lot of confusion. They almost a dark horse come in there. I predicted there'd be a dark horse in this race, but from all the records and everything going on.
Do you think Carl Perkins has done us?
Yes, he's done us as well as any politician. These politicians, and you know as well as I do, they'll promise you everything in the world. Whatever you say is just right. The other way, it's agreeable, you know. But I think he's favored us as much as he has any of the other portions of his.
And that's true. He's helped up in the eastern part, too, hasn't he? Quite a bit. Of course, that's where he's from.
Yeah, that's where he's from. But I think he's favored this area as much as he possibly could.
Do we know anything about Burke Holmes?
No,
I don't. That was on here. I was just wondering.
No, I don't. I know him, but I don't know that much about him.
When we did have trouble back, when we really had state police and that, did you have to wait till they came out of Greenwood?
Oh, yeah. We usually had a deputy sheriff in this end of the county, not always from this one little area, but he'd be in this section. But it seemed like whenever you need anyone, it's longer than what you think it should be, you know, before they come to help. But our protection in this county right now is fairly decent.
It is.
J. Paul Davis of Florida, Kentucky, made the last large packet boat trips up the Big Sandy River in 1921. Mrs. Johnson's letter was deeply appreciated, as was the eyewitness account of the last three trips up the winding Big Sandy by her brother, J. Paul Davis. Mr. Davis' account is so interesting and informative, we feel we should print the entire story as Mr. Davis wrote it. The title of the account of the trips is titled The History of the Steamer J.P. Davis, Last of the Big Steamers to Ply the Big Sandy. To bring the story of the steamer J.P. Davis up to the beginning of the Big Sandy career, I'll have to go back a few years prior to that date of 1921. My father, is back as far as I can remember in the early 1900s, was a so-called riverman. He owned and operated several boats successfully, including a number of ferries which plied the Ohio River between Fort Ohio and Fort Kentucky. In 1915, he built my mother a moving picture show, the only one in our surrounding territory. She operated it successfully for 4 years. My parents had a long lease on what was known as Coney Island Amusement Park in Fulton, our hometown, and in 1920 they wished to expand in the show business and decided and didn't buy a complete carnival outfit, merry-go-round, Ferris wheel, and so forth. And to get the crowd from Fulton over to the park, they followed the idea of having an excursion boat to make a regular trip from there direct to the park. So Dad and I made a trip up and down the Ohio River trying to locate a boat that would be suitable to our business. At Point Pleasant, West Virginia, we bought a Green Line steamer, which was then on the dock for hulk repairs, the boat being the steamer Greendale. We modeled it, and as Dad had already previously had several boats to carry his name, we decided to name it after me, so we named it the steamer J.P. Davis. We had an extremely successful season in the park at 1920. Dad thought of the idea of placing our boat on the Big Sandy River, using it as a packet and merchandising service in the winter season when that river reaches a stage to permit a boat that size of J.P. Davis to reach Pikeville. In January 1921, we loaded the steamer J.P. Davis with all kinds of merchandise, flour, feed, and all kinds of potatoes, coffee, sugar, and hundreds of cases of canned goods, to be exact, $22,000 worth. And started up the Big Sandy River for our first trip to sell it to the people along the river. We ran into our first difficulty at the bridge east of Calvisburg. The water was high and the boat's smokestacks were not clear yet, and they were knocked down and caused a slight fire on the upper deck. From there on, we were more observing and had no more type of that trouble. The boat had a fly-fi, and I knew how to play two numbers, my old Kentucky home and carry me back to old Virginia. I would play those two numbers and the people would flock down the river to see what the excitement was, and our sails would begin. We would stop back and forth on either side of the river, and on that trip the merchandise was sold completely out before we reached Pinkville. We came home and loaded again, but had to wait several days before we had sufficient water to make another trip. We were again very successful in disposing of the merchandise and sold it all out when we reached Prestonburg. The river was falling rapidly and we were stranded to that town for 2 weeks, but after a hard rain the river raised and we returned home. One night about 2 a.m. on our way down to Louisa, we were hailed by an old farmer who seemed to be very happy from drinking Mountain Dew. He told my dad he would give that boy and me $10 to hear me play that music box, as he called it. Dad made me get out of bed and play a tune for him, and of course that made me very unhappy. The third trip and the last trip was made several days later, and after the merchandise was sold, the river was at a stage that permitted our going on into Pikeville. We docked there several hours, and hundreds of people came aboard to inspect the steamer J.P. Davis, which was the largest packet to ever be there. Then we pulled out and started our last journey home. Someplace near Paintsville, the boat grounded in shallow water and sank. I got in touch with an experienced driver and he repaired it so we could get home. Sometime later, my parents sold that boat to a group of men in Pennsylvania to be used as a packet on the Muskingum River. We will learn later that it was destroyed afar and the machinery was being used on another boat in that district. Two experiences happened to me on my second trip I shall never forget. An old man hailed us, and when he came abroad, he had a coffee sack over his shoulder with something in it. I asked him what he wanted to buy, and he said he had something to sell, 2 gallons of homemade blackberry wine, 4 years old.
I bought it and started upstairs to have Cy, our colored cook, hide it for me. My dad saw me carrying the sack and asked me what I had, and I had to think quick and told him it was 2 gallons of molasses that Cy wanted so we could have hot cakes for breakfast. The answer was satisfactory for the moment, and I gave it to Cy and really told him what it was, and we would drink some after supper. I worked on my books while Cy was cleaning up his supper dishes, and then I went over to where he was, and I drank 16 cups full of that delightful stuff, then managed to reach my stateroom and get in bed. The next morning, I was not feeling so delightful. The boat didn't move out on schedule due to the fact that I was too sick to play my tunes on the music box, and Cy was too sick to get the crew's breakfast. I had charge of all the money and kept it in the office safe. Had so much of it, I put it in an old fish pan. I was balancing my books the night before we would reach home and somehow added my figures wrong, with the result that I was coming out short about $4,000. I checked and rechecked, overlooking the mistake each time. I told my dad about it, and I thought someone of the crew had discovered the combination of the safe. He advised me to say nothing about it, and he would handle the matter. Just before we landed at home, he lined each deckhand up and searched them, then kept them under watch until they left the boat. Nothing was found of the supposedly missing money, so I took the money and books and turned them over to my mother with my sad story. She checked my figures covering the purchases and the money I had discovered an Aryan edition of figures on merchandise we purchased, and it immediately took care of the missing money. I have never lived that mistake down through all these years. I live with my parents yet, who are nearing their middle 80s. They are very active and comfortable, and when I cash some of my mother's personal checks, she counts after me and always says, "I haven't forgot your bookkeeping and your accounting on the J.P. Davis." I thought that was good. Didn't you?
That was good, mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Mr. Davis, now was it just a judge on this end of the county, or what
well,
actually was it?
At that time, they had the county judge, and then he had what was two, they classified him as two assistants. We were called trial commissioners. They had one in the upper end of the county and one in the lower end of the county.
Who was that under?
Under Arthur Sparks, Judge Arthur Sparks. He's deceased now. And I had it, I think, from 1956 to 1960. And I tried all the cases other than your criminal cases. I prepared the papers for those and sent them in the arena. Mm-hmm. But my major cases I had was traffic, mostly traffic, and misdemeanors, I'll put it that way. I had a lot of drugs, a lot of misdemeanors.
Okay.
And it was a headache.
It was a lot of bother.
Yeah. Every time I see anyone coming in, a stranger, I think, well, what's their troubles?
Yeah.
And I know I told my mother it was bothering me. I don't have too much sympathy for anyone, but I have enough sympathy for the average person.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel sorry for some of their trouble they begin, and it kind of bothered me. And I said, I don't think I'm going to keep this job. It's too much. There's too much sadness to it. I said, you don't see any pleasure. Because I said, every time you see a stranger coming in your place, you think, well, what's their trouble? And there for a while, it bothered me. And then after so many days or weeks, I thought, the heck with it. That's their trouble. And all I can do is try to help them out.
That's true.
And as they leave, I wouldn't think any more about it.
Just a job.
Just a job. Absolutely a job. And I don't know any law at all. All I know is right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And yes or no.
That's true.
There's no in between.
Yes.
It's either right or wrong, or
mm-hmm.
it's yes or no.
That's true. That's true. That's true. Now we talked about, you traveled quite a bit. Oh, I did want to get back to this here pertaining to the city of South Shore. Was Robinson's Funeral Home the first one?
No, Morton's was the first one.
Morton's was the first one then. And then this one was built.
Uh-huh. So the first thing that was built in this town was this garage over here, the building you're in right now.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Hanna built that for my brother-in-law, Robert Johnson, that's Doris's husband.
Uh-huh.
And he sold Chevrolets there for years. And then he went out of business, and the Ford people took it over, and then Mr. Hannah built him the garage down there for the drugstore. It's the new drugstore.
Oh, yes.
And that was the second building. And the third building was Robinson's over here. He built, Mr. Hannah built that for him, and he moved his grocery store from Fullerton up to here. That's about the only thing up here, and then Mortonsville. And up here where Ron is, that was a restaurant at one time, and then I built. And outside of that, that was it. I've seen it grow from four or five buildings to where it is today.
Now, what has always been across the street where Harvest Gas is now? Has that?
That was built in 40, I believe that was built in 46. Now, where the old hotel, where the Nine of the Beauty Shop was, that was an old building, too. That was built after I come up here, but it's an old building.
That was actually a hotel?
Oh, yeah, a rooming house. Mrs. Crawford operated there. I stayed there every winter when my mother and dad was to go south. I stayed over there for about 15
years.
Okay,
was that a place where they cooked meals and served, too?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I had a room up there in the West End there. I stayed there for about 20 years. She's a nice lady.
Was she?
Yes, she was. A lovely lady.
And that was work too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Something like that. Oh, yeah, her plate to be full is several teachers. Jesse Stewart stayed there.
Oh, really?
Three or four winters when I was there. And she always was filled up, always had a waiting list trying to get in.
Jesse Stewart, was he just an average person? Sometimes I get to wonder, maybe I shouldn't say this, that it seemed like he could have helped students, maybe put some of them through college or something. I'm sure he had the money.
He did in later years, but honey, listen, years ago, school teachers only made $60 and $70 a month.
Yeah, but I meant since that he has accumulated this and wrote all these books. Do you think he would have had a scholarship set up?
Well, that's true too, but
I don't know. Maybe he did. Maybe it is. People don't know about it. I don't know. It's possible.
I don't. If he's ever had that kind of a program, I don't recall him. But Jesse saw it awful close there for a long time, money wise, and he borrowed a dollar from him, and he'd go home on Saturdays. And school teachers then only made $60-$70 a month. So you didn't have much circumstances.
Did he room to some of the kings?
Yes. His later years, when he taught with Cal, and I think he taught in Portugal too, if I'm not mistaken, he stayed with Mrs. King. Bars King.
Yes.
That's where Dr. Riddle built his home.
Yes.
Where the old king
was.
I've eaten many meal there.
I said she did. She really put
Every summer she knew how I liked chicken and dumplings so well, and every summer she had a group from Portsmouth that she would invite, and she'd have Jesse Stewart and his wife, Naomi, and myself, and two Sundays one in the summer and one in the fall, and she'd always have homemade ice cream and chicken and dumplings.
Oh, really? Well, how I knew about the Kings, which I wasn't born and raised here, but Mr. and Miss Donnelly, Paris Donnelly.
Oh, yes.
That's where I got my information.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've seen them there many times.
And I think they used to go and play cards.
Yeah, I played cards with Miss King a lot.
And that's how I came to know that he did stay there.
What was the game they played? It wasn't bridge, because they didn't play bridge. Canasta. That's the game they played. Yeah, I've been to several parties to her house. She always was a gracious host. Very gracious.
Well, you've been a lot of different places, and met a lot of people, too. Who were some of the people that really impressed you that you've met? We have this one, Gloria Swanson.
Well, I believe she was the most impressive person I ever met in my life. And she was gracious, and she was beautiful.
She's really beautiful?
Yes, she was beautiful. She's only about 19 or 20 when I met her.
Oh, really?
And Marlene Dietrich, I met her in Portsmouth during the war. I was home on vacation, and she was in Portsmouth promoting the sales of war bonds. And this friend of mine, she Shade Curve Hotel, and this friend of mine, I was there, and he introduced her to me. Of course, I only said, how are you doing, this and that. But she, she's a nice person, but she wasn't comparable to Gloria's mom.
Oh, really? And you've always had new cars.
Yeah, I've had
34
brand new Cadillacs.
And you was telling me before the difference in your mileage you put on now and when you were younger.
Well, when I was younger, my mother and dad always spent their winters in the South or in Arkansas. My dad was a rheumatic or an arthritis patient, and he went to Arkansas a good many times. And in the fall, I'd drive them down, and it was about the middle of October. Then I'd go and visit them in November, Thanksgiving. Then I'd go again Christmas and stay 2 or 3 days. And then whenever they come home in March or April, whatever month it would be, I'd always drive down and get them.
Okay.
So that's the reason I was putting so many mileage on my car. So. One car, I think the most I had on one car was 21,000.
Uh-huh.
And the least I had on one of the cars, I think, was 5,500. My dealer in Portland would have a waiting list for my car.
For your car?
Because they know when I turned them in, they were in good shape, well taken care of, and they knew the history of them.
That's true. You want to read that?
Yeah.
We will make sure we get that on there.
Uh-huh.
And we'll just go into that one. Then we'll get the other things just here and then.
Here I go.
Okay.
Yes, I will tell you my age. I'm 80 years old. No, I don't have good health. I have great health. Never been ill in my whole life other than a few hangovers and 2 major automobile accidents, which you cannot charge to physical nature. While I can still do a couple of routine tap dances I did in the old Keith Vaudeville circuit days back in the roaring 20s. I never get worried or unhappy too often due to the fact that I keep busy, and anyway, those 2 words, worried and unhappy, have no room in any of my programs. I will now sign off. I'm J. Paul Davis, South Shore, Kentucky, on the corner. If Kentucky Library Association wants me to make another recording of history, you are welcome to come back in 20 years. By that time, I hope to be using Phonovation. So that's all I've got.
And when you were a child and growing up, can you remember what kind of games you played? Like when you went to school?
Well, there was one called shinny. And you'd choose up sides, you'd have sticks. And you'd try to... A lot of times on Saturday, go up in the hills and try to get a stick or a, I don't know what you call it, a tree or something, that would have a hook on it, you know. And it was, we'd choose up sides and be just an old tin can, and you'd try to get that tin can down to each end of the field. You take the hook. We played that all the time in the fall, in good weather.
Yeah. Hmm.
And there wasn't any basketball, very little football. I don't know. There was a little baseball in the summertime.
Uh-huh.
But there was no professional life games you played in school, not basketball or any of those games. Mm-hmm. None.
Now, who disciplined you when you were a child? Your mother or your father?
My mother.
Your mother.
I don't think my dad ever laid his hand on me. Really. He might have slapped me one time, but I don't ever recall that.
What were the churches mostly? What was the
only had the 2 churches here, the Christian and the Methodist.
Methodist.
2 churches. I don't know any other denominations here in this area.
That's wonderful. Now, the Methodist has moved, hasn't it?
Yeah, it was an old porch down there. So it'd be hard for me to describe it to you. But anyway, they was there for years and years and years, and then moved it up here to this place here. And the Christian church was down there at one time. They was pretty close together. And of course, it's over here close to Legion Field.
Yeah, that's true.
But they've been so many of the other denominations sprung up every place,
yes,
you know.
That's true.
Church of God and Church of Christ and Nazarene. Oh,
But those were the two problems.
That was only the two here. There was only not only the problem, but the only the two here.
Have they always voted up the street here? Or not?
Well, since South Shore's been here, mm-hmm. they vote here and over here. But in Fullerton, they voted, when we had them on voting place, and that was for this area up here in Sunshine and Board of the Nation and all this part, all voted in Fullerton precinct. We only had the one precinct there. And it was down there, well, close to where the park is, of course, Moyon Park. Mm-hmm. So all those buildings have been taken down. But they had one voting place there. And everyone voted there.
Was the elections, were they kind of rough when it came back? Polling place.
There'd always be a lot of drinking around the polls, and we had some, I'll put it this way, we had some awful strong Democrats in this area, and we had some awful strong Republicans. Now, my dad was a strong Republican, or a strong Democrat, and he'd fight you in a minute with Republicans.
If
you'd say anything about one of some of his Democrat friends, he'd read it.
That was it.
And then we had some awful strong Republicans here, too.
This really is a Democratic county.
Oh, yes, it definitely so.
Sometimes politics plays a little bit too much, don't you think?
Well, they used to play more than they do
so?
Now. I mean, physically, years ago. You could just get a pick a fight anytime around the polls years ago, really. There's always trouble.
Did they buy votes then with whiskey?
Oh, yes. With whiskey and money vote. Yes, I've seen a lot of money exchange happening. I think my dad was one of the promoters of that. He'd spend a lot of money to get all the Democrats over there. Money didn't mean a thing to him.
When it comes to election.
But your politics are, I don't know. Seems like I don't have as much respect for politics as I used to.
That's true.
They tell you one thing and then do the other.
Do something else. We don't have much choice in this election. What do you think about the presidential election coming up, 1980?
Well, unless I change my mind, I don't know if I'll even go to the polls this year or not. And I haven't missed a national election all my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for Carter's programs, and I sure don't care for Reagan's programs. Our economy has been going downhill for the last 4 years. It really has. You know it has.
That's true.
Your prices keep it going up. I don't see how the ordinary person that has a family, I don't see how they can make it really out of it. And the business, I have a small business here. I don't have any expense at all other than my utilities.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to pay an employee of one or two, I couldn't have a comfortable living here at all.
Sure.
Because it'd take off my property.
Yes.
I do have a comfortable, and I have one of one. I don't waste money. I never did. People around here may think I have wasted money, but I have, and I've got the money value for my activities. I really have. I've traveled a lot. I've gone to races a lot. And a lot of people here in town say, well, I've made a lot of my money by gambling. If I made money gambling, I would be going the other way.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And many a time I've gone to the races and come back and had to go to the bank and get money, and then I'd have some money in my pocket, and I'd go across the street and I'd say, look what I won at the races yesterday, and had to go to the bank to replace what I'd lost, you know. So those stories, they spread pretty rapidly, if they want to.
If they want to, that's true.
And I never gambled for money. I've played cards all my life, but I've been accused of running a gambling table. I wouldn't know how to operate.
But people will do those things.
They'll do, and I.
A lot of times I think it's out of jealousy, too.
Well, I know that some of us been here in town as jealous. Now I know I'm not a name giver at all. But I hadn't gone to the races far. I don't guess for 6 months, and I was dressed up and gone to get a check cash at the local store here, and they say, you're going to the races again? And I hadn't been to the races for 6 months.
Oh, that's terrible. Do you enjoy the races?
Yes, I do. I've gone many, many times when Mr. Wheeler was living. He operated the station below me here, and he always had plenty of help. He always had four or five people, and if he wanted to go to the races, he'd say, well, Davis, I'll send someone up to work for him, we'll go to the races. And we've gone as many as four times a week.
Oh, really?
Yes. We used to. And I guess that's where I got the name of horse man, you know.
Yeah.
They say he's made all his money playing the horses. Well, honey, if I was had a debit and credit on my horse racing, it would be on the debit side.
That's true. I'd say.
So
yeah.
I don't argue with people when they say, "Oh, I've been referred to as being a gambler." Well, mercy, if I made the money they thought I'd made, I wouldn't be sitting here in the service station.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because eventually gambling, you don't.
Oh,
there's no way.
You can win. I'm sure I've had many good days at the races, but Lord, I've had many more bad days than I have.
Sure. You just, it's something you enjoy. Just a pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Now, this Sunday, for instance, we went to the races, and I told Delmer and Byron, I said, now, Byron, I'm taking $100, and I lose it. It's gone. Well, I lost about 50 of it. Well, I had $50 worth of fun.
Well, sure.
Now that's where I say your money.
That's right.
You get the value of your money.
Mm-hmm.
I had a $50 worth of fun.
Fine. That's right.
And I had a $15 stake.
I bet you enjoyed it.
Oh
though.
Yeah, we always have a good time.
Sure. You've got to once in a while.
Sue, I wouldn't have to sit here an evening or any time and be lonesome because there's someone wanting you to do something all the time.
Well, they enjoy your cat.
Well, if I don't know the
cat. I'm sure they do.
But I enjoy going. I play bridge a couple of nights a week. And many, many parties, a few years ago when I used to go to a lot of parties, they'd call and say, well, we're having a party. And if I couldn't go that night, they'd say, well, we'll just postpone it till you can come.
They enjoy
so
it.
They must enjoy being around here.
That's true. That's
true. It's been pretty free. I'm not stingy now. I sue people that have money and don't enjoy it. I don't have any sympathy for them when they have bad luck.
That's true.
No, I really don't have any sympathy. I love to see everyone have everything they want and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But these people will turn a light out when they leave the bathroom tonight, or turn a light out, or won't run their air conditioner in their when they're uncomfortable, or get in the car and won't put their air conditioner on because it's using a little bit more gas. Those people, I have no sympathy at all.
That's true. That's true.
Now, if they didn't have it, I'd say come in and use mine.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them has more than I have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I know of people right here in this town has more than I do.
And they will cut corners.
Absolutely. Go to a restaurant and buy the cheapest hamburger or the cheapest thing they can buy on that menu. That's no good.
No.
No, that's no good.
You're not enjoying your life, are you?
No.
Really, you're not. Well,